is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. He's also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're coming off the bye with the Cardinals with episode 335, so we don't have a game to talk about, but there are some fun things to talk about. We'll jump right in. My first topic on deck in this show, we'll talk about Cliff Kingsbury and coaching rumors. It's not a hot seat. He's got some bag that he could collect. We'll look at the situation in the division, discuss how we think they'll come out of the bye this week, considering how they've come out of the bye in previous weeks, previous seasons, and after the holiday weekend. How to win the division, and then look ahead to their Week 13 matchup as they come out of the bye against the Chicago Bears. Seth, tell me how surprised you were to hear that after Lincoln Riley bailed Oklahoma to go coach USC, something I am not super thrilled about as an Arizona State fan, but to then hear that Oklahoma is targeting, supposedly, Cliff Kingsbury to be their next head coach. It felt like it came out of left field for me.
Yeah, I think out of left field is a good way to put it. You know, obviously there's the reality that you and I, and I think most people believe this is simply Cliff's agent, Eric Burkhart. Am I correct in saying that? Eric Burkhart just using the national media to kind of start the conversation about Cliff getting an extension. He's got 1 year and a team option remaining on his contract, meaning he's only guaranteed next year. Meaning he's only guaranteed $5.5 million. So obviously the team could pick up his extension. I would assume that's probably $5.5 or $6 million, right around the same amount of money. Right. And so they do that. All right, he's guaranteed, you know, $11 million, $12 million, whatever. But, you know, Burkhart and Cliff are being smart. They're the best team in the NFL. They've completely, you know, revamped the perception of their team. And let's be completely fair. Cliff has revamped the perception of himself by going 2-1 with Colt McCoy at the helm. And so when you look at it from the Cliff perspective, it makes sense, right? You come out, you say, hey, as Cliff's agent, hey, you know, we'd listen if OU was interested in throwing the bag at us. And when Jess and I get into this conversation, the bag is a lot of money. And what that does is that lets the Cardinals know that, yeah, we want to be here. We want to be committed to you guys, but you guys need to show it to us as well. You know, he's only got that 1 year left on his contract. Let's work something out. Let's get an extension. Most NFL coaching extensions typically are between 4 and 6 years. The reason I say typically is coaches sign for 5 years with a team option for a 6 year, or 4 years with a team option for a 5 year, for a fifth year. So typically what'll happen is they'll just tack on that additional year, guarantee that money plus a bonus of some type, and then extend them out to where they're, you know, paying them for 10 years total over the course of two contracts. That's typically how it works. I mean, outside of Sean Payton and Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, who basically just get a blank check or a check every year with no end date in sight, right? Like, and allegedly, you know, Belichick's making $20 million a year, but that guy's a different animal. So when you look at it from that perspective, I don't think anybody should be shocked. you know, as much as we're loving this season, we have to remember too, at the same time, this is a business where Cliff, you know, came into the season, according to pundits, on the hot seat, and now he's got a chance to potentially, you know, extend his contract and be a guy that, I mean, if he signs a 5-year contract extension, so he's got 2 5-year deals, would we not agree that that is, shocking is probably a strong word, but surprising based on what all the experts told us when the Cardinals hired him?
Oh, totally, because they never, ever, ever thought that that was, they thought he was a bad choice to begin with. And then even heading into this season with the success they had, there's still people that don't really believe in him yet.
Right. And so from that perspective, I look at it as, you know, Cliff is, and when I say Cliff, obviously we're talking about his agent, is driving to get that extension. Now, I do think that there is something to worry about. And this is just the reality of the NFL versus college football in terms of paychecks. The college paychecks tend to be ridiculous.
For those top programs, absolutely. Like, think about this. The report, now that I'm going to preface this, that the guy who put it out there in Twitter and then was retweeted by everyone is by no means any sort of reporter, but the money that Riley is getting from USC is crazy. Supposedly, what, $15 million a year, plus buying both of his homes in Norman, Oklahoma, over, so basically $1 million bonus by paying $500,000 over listing price, over value. Then, you know, purchasing him a home in Southern California and giving him and his family unlimited use to the private jet. This is like monopoly fake money. Like, what, how is any of this possible money?
Right. And, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, you look at if Oklahoma, or let's even throw in Notre Dame, if those teams are being serious, if they're saying, hey, we want Cliff Kingsbury, it's really difficult to see an NFL team being able to compete. And the reason why we say that isn't because it's, you know, impossible to pay him. The reason we say that is because the NBA rarely gives out 10-year contracts. It's just not something you see very often. I think we saw it with John Gruden.
Yeah, and Gruden was, and the Raiders were crazy when they did it. One, and two, one of the biggest reasons is because they had to get him out of his ESPN deal because he had a really lucrative, cushy job doing Monday Night Football for ESPN.
And so, and to that, it's similar to what most college teams and coaches do. The reason that you see, oh gosh, who was the guy up at Michigan State that just got paid? I can't remember his name, but he was the, you know, he was the coach of Buffalo and things like that. Get a 10-year, $95 million deal. And you might say, well, you know, if, what if the Cardinals come in and offer Cliff $11 million a year, 5 years, $55 million. And that would make him the fourth highest paid coach in the NFL. That'd be phenomenal, right? Like, I think everybody would be like, all right, they got Cliff locked up for 50. Well, think about this. This dude at Michigan State who's had one good season, not even participating in the Big Ten championship, just got $95 million, $40 million more than we're talking about paying Cliff. And that's,
and Michigan State's a good program,
right? They're slightly above Arizona State type of program. Now imagine it's Oklahoma, who's been to 3 college football playoffs, or Notre Dame, who's been to 2 college football playoffs and is the 5th seed in this in the 2022 college football playoff or 2021 college football playoffs, meaning that if any of the top four teams lose, they likely get in again. And so those teams come in and say, hey, you know what? You want to get paid 12 or, you know, 11 million a year. You know what? We'll pay you 12 million a year, 12 and a half million a year. And we'll double the length of the contract. So we'll give you 10 years, $125 million. Let's be honest. I think most of us would be like, Cliff, you're insane if you don't take that money.
And that's like, the thing. It isn't so. And let's preface it this way. Things that we know about Cliff Kingsbury. Since coming to the pros, he has made it publicly known on multiple occasions. He's glad he doesn't have to deal with boosters. He's glad he doesn't have to deal with recruiting. He's glad he doesn't have to deal with grades. He loves the professionalism that come with the players, and it helps him be a better coach because of the way players treat things. And he's not babysitting; he's just doing ball. It's just ball, and so he doesn't have that extra stuff. Now, does he have the same level of control he would that in a college program where you have your fingers in everything? And some guys are really meant for that. I don't know if Cliff Kingsbury is made for that. That said, everyone's got a price. And so this isn't, and I'm going to, I heard it. I ran across it on Twitter, and it's that one show that here locally that always pounds the drum on the Cardinals are a bad organization. You know, Bidwill stinks, this and that. It doesn't. So if Cliff Kingsbury leaves, it has nothing to do with the Cardinals organization. It is, he's being an offer he can't refuse. Simply put, that's what it's going to take. Because he loves the NFL. But if you're going to turn away from twice the security and twice the money, you are, I mean, that's a bad business decision. So if it's an offer you can't refuse, he's going to deal with, like, it would make sense. Oklahoma is joining the SEC. Now, granted, it's going to have an upward battle to compete in the SEC, considering the programs that are already there. He's going to get major recruits. They've been a big time recruiter. He'll get recruits based on the fact of the success he's had in the NFL, the players he's developed, especially quarterbacks. The Oklahoma's getting SEC money now, so they can throw money at Kingsbury. So this is not, if he leaves, it is not about the Cardinals, and it is all about the opportunity. That said, odds, if you were to say, percentage-wise, what percent chance do you say that he does end up leaving the Cardinals for a college gig?
I would say only 25%, and I know that seems a little high, but the way that the money's being thrown around and the fact that there's two blue chip or blue blood college football programs in Oklahoma and Notre Dame, that makes it incredibly difficult, because typically those teams, those programs just have blank checks available. And that, I mean, that's a tough, like Jess just said, that's a tough thing to bypass. I mean, look, we're not saying Cliff's not worth it. We're not saying any of this, but the NFL is such a year-to-year thing that even a five-year extension for Cliff Kingsbury, a five-year, $55, $60 million extension would be, it'd be tough to swallow for us. We'd be like, God, that's a lot of faith in Kingsbury, who's had, you know, a good year and a great year in three, you know, but it's hopeful too, right? Like, now all of a sudden you factor in Kyler's, you're talking about a 10-year plan, which in the NFL is basically unheard of, right?
Like, right. And here's what's good about the scenario in Arizona. Okay, he's already done the building blocks. He has his quarterback. He has an owner. He has an owner who's willing to open up his checkbook or direct deposit or whatever. So he's willing to pay to get quality players. He has a general manager who is going to get talented players for him. The relationship Cliff Kingsbury has, he basically checks off all the most talented players and says, hey, Steve, get me these guys. I want all the good players. And Steve goes out and does what he can to get those talented players. They take risks. And you've got the stability of your franchise quarterback. That question has been answered. We don't have to worry about that. Kyler healthy means that they don't have to look for a quarterback for several years. And so the things that he would have to do at a college program nearly every year, those building blocks are to heal. And so, and it's one of the 32 best jobs in the world. And while the money might not be the same, it's still going to be really good. And I will say this, I was super surprised. I thought that Kliff was probably making among the lowest salaries among head coaches in the league. I had never seen it report. I looked it up, and apparently last month, a story in NBC Sports listed the salaries of head coaches that we knew. Kliff comes in, and he's in the upper third. He makes $5.5 million a year. He's number 11 in the league compared to, you know, Kyle Shanahan. And for the 49ers, making $3.5 million, and he's already been to a Super Bowl. I'm sure part of that was dealing to, for the buyout for the USC deal. But that said, the Cardinals went out and paid more than I thought they would. Now, benefit, Steve Wilkes' contract expires after this year. Yes, the Cardinals have still been paying Steve Wilkes. They gave him a four-year deal when he was hired, just like they gave Kliff with the one-year option. And so that money comes off the books, and they can now afford, really budgetary-wise, in terms of managing, it doesn't go against the cap, but they can afford to take the money that they were paying Wilkes plus a raise and give it to Kliff and not really bat an eye. I think if the money is crazy that he gets from Oklahoma or Notre Dame, I think it might be 50-50. That said, I think Kliff really, really likes it in the NFL, and I think that was ultimately his goal anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the truth. And, you know, this isn't us being homers or anything like that. I think if Kliff had his druthers, he'd prefer to get a five-year, $60 million contract from the Cardinals and move forward. However, you know, it is really, really difficult for any sane person to turn down 10 years and $125 million. It just, I mean...
Because and if it, he's going to get all that money.
Right. That's what people don't get is like, this isn't player contracts. Like if Kliff signs for 560, he gets all 60, you know, barring obviously arrest or things like that. But if he signs for 10, 125, he can get fired after the first year if it's not for cause. And he gets $125 million. Like
that's how it goes.
That's just the reality. So that, I mean, if Jess and I say that there is a concern and we're really not that worried, but if there's a concern, that's the only thing that Jess and I would be concerned about is that college money is fake. I mean, it's just not, it's just not a real thing. Like NFL teams don't have the ability to pay 10 years, $125 million to a coach. So it just makes it super difficult from that perspective to gauge, you know, what he's going to do. But again, will Jess and I be sad? Absolutely. I mean, it would be devastating to finally feel like you've got the guy, the quarterback, you know, it all fit together and then lose him because, you know, Oklahoma was like, here's $150 million.
And this would and be like, the first time in Cardinals history that this has happened. Because do you know how many coaches the Cardinals have had since coming to Arizona got head coaching jobs elsewhere?
Two.
Gene Stallings.
Oh, yeah, three.
Gene Stallings became a head coach again. Yeah, that was at Alabama, won himself the championship there. If we go through the thing, Gene Stallings, Joe Bugle, Buddy Ryan, Vince Tobin, Dave McGinnis, Dennis Green. No one except for Bruce Arians got a head coaching gig after that.
And Wiz did as well, but that was with the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. He did, yeah. That failed.
But I mean, you, to your point, like you look at it and it's just, it's not something that happens. And so for it to be before he's let go, I mean, this would be literally the first time in Arizona Cardinals history that a coach was sought out that was under contract.
Yeah. Now, dealing with longevity, if this is looking way ahead, say he signs his extension, if he makes it, so he's already halfway there. Cardinals have not had a coach for longer than six seasons, ever. Ever. Arians for five, Wisenhunt for six. We go back. No one lasted. So Vince Tobin was four. And we go back to Jim Hanifan. Back in St. Louis, it was six. They got four with Coryell. They had five with Winter. They had four with Lem. So they've never had a coach last for longer than six seasons. If they extend him, if they give like an extension, so take the like of 5 years or five plus six, you know, if they go the next year is fourth year and then he's got another 5 to 6 after that. If he can somehow make it to that end of the run, which is possible because when you've got a coach player, coach quarterback dynamic and the comp that you were giving before the show was that of Sean Payton, Drew Brees. You have a potential to have not necessarily titles, because like I mean the Saints got one, but to have that sort of run in terms of success, where you are consistently competitive for an entire decade, you've got that with Cliff and Kyler, and that continuity makes coaching careers, makes coaching legacies, and it makes franchise quarterback legacies. You see some of these great quarterbacks, it's the longevity that they have with their head coach, Drew Brees. You've got Tom Brady, of course. And then you've got some examples of guys who've done it over the course of several coaches. Peyton Manning did it with multiple coaches. You've got other guys like that as well. But it's you put the Cardinals in a position to be sustainable success, because what ultimately fell apart with these other coaches is they didn't have their quarterback. You know, Wisenhunt didn't have anyone after Kurt Warner. Arians didn't have anyone after Carson Palmer. Dennis Green never found his guy. McGinnis, he dealt with the last not so good years of Jake Plummer. Tobin had a guy in Plummer, but it sort of the wheels fell off after 1999. And so the Cardinals finally are in a scenario where they've got a coach and a quarterback marriage that's perfect, and we could see a run that this is franchise changing potentially in terms of what we've seen historically. Those who've been following the Cardinals for years and years and years, the move to get Kingsbury and then drafting Kyler Murray, those two moves together might be franchise changing if we look back at it historically. It's still very early, but it has that potential.
Right, but and here's the other thing is, and again, there are always circumstances, so don't be like, well, you said, but let's say that he signs his extension. So they guarantee that fifth year and then he signs his extension. So he's under contract basically for 10 seasons. The reality is, barring something crazy, he's going to break the franchise record for most seasons coached, because if you give him five additional seasons, you're going to see through at least two of those, right? So whatever happens this year, he's probably going to get four additional seasons after this season, which puts him at seven. And then from there, kind of, you'll see where you're at. But that's the ideal. And that's looking at it from you just signed this guy to a five-year extension and looking at it almost as a negative, right? Like, oh, what's the worst case scenario? And that's, again, that's franchise changing. There's never been that kind of consistency. There's never been a guy that you're like, hey, we at coach or quarterback, where it's been, hey, this was a decade long. I mean, we're talking about the entire 2020s. I know that's hard because it's just 2021. I know that's really hard to grasp, but I mean, think about that. Like, we're basically saying, like, Cliff and Kyler will be the guys for the 2020s. That's unheard of in the NFL for the most part, but I mean, definitely in Arizona, right? Like, that's we've never had that type of sustainability.
Right. And that's fantastic.
And that's the other crazy thing is that's why you do worry, because you're talking about potentially losing that entire thing that we think has a chance to be special. And that is, I don't want to say terrifying, but from a Cardinals perspective, from a perspective of a team that's never been great, or in a franchise that's never had any type of sustained success, that is terrifying, because you go, what if he takes it? And now you got to find the right fit for Kyler. And yeah, it's just, that's not what you want. No, so
definitely not. But coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals coming off their bye. Before we talk about the game, let's discuss their history coming off of the bye and off the holiday weekend. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals coming off their bye week. As we know, over the first two seasons under Cliff Kingsbury with Kyler Murray, the bye week has not treated the Cardinals well in terms of how they play afterwards. But be it the combination of the Thanksgiving weekend and the bye. In 2019, they came out of the bye and had their worst performance of the year when they were blown out by the Rams 34-7. And honestly, it corresponded with Thanksgiving weekend. So they had the bye week over Thanksgiving. Cliff basically gave them the week off. It's a good time to kind of rest and relax. And then they came back and they laid an egg. It was awful. It was Kyler's worst game of the year. Move it up to 2020. They come off the bye week, which was earlier in the year. It was a week 8 bye. And they came out at home and lost to the Miami Dolphins 34-31. Now, granted, there were other things involved, but that defense struggled against Tua Tagovailoa. They entered the game down cornerbacks and then lost other cornerbacks, and so they ended up with Jace Whitaker and Devontae Bosby. But Tua Tagovailoa sort of shredded them, and then the questionable decisions by Cliff at the end, they try to go for a game-tying field goal with Zane Gonzalez instead of keeping moving ball the field, and he missed the field goal. They win 34-31. But if we go to Thanksgiving weekend, they go and they also laid an egg against the New England Patriots. They lose 20-17. They struggle offensively. Zane Gonzalez misses a game-winning kick. Things like that. So the Cardinals have not had a good history over the last two seasons about the bye week or Thanksgiving weekend. Do you fear the same thing? Is this team going to suffer the same things? Or without talking about the Bears, the Cardinals play, do you worry about them being rusty and coming out slow?
No, I don't see it. Like you said, I think a lot of it comes down to this is a different team, right? This is a team that is looking to really change the perception of who they are, not just as a team, but a franchise, as an organization. I know Kyler was the quarterback in those two games, and you discussed him, and he played well against Miami. It's not like he played poorly. But I think he's a bit different in what he's looking for and expecting from his team now. He is much more entrenched, I guess we could say, as the leader of this team, and they feed off of him and his work ethic and attitude. And those things are different than what we saw, especially year one, but even last year, where like you said, there was a lot to it last year. I wouldn't say last year was just as simple as being like, oh yeah, they lost coming out of the bye. They were devastated with injury at a key position and played like it. And then they obviously were without Chandler Jones at that point. And so their pass rush sucked. And so those two things really did kind of play to the fact that they were just not any good at that point. They were running on fumes. You know, that being said, I think this is a game where you can see them come out and really try to make a statement in terms of what and who they are this year. I think that is one of the things that we've seen, is that they're trying to change the perception of who they are as a team and what their expectations are for this season. And so with that, you know, all being said, I think they come out and I think that they make a statement more than anything. I don't think they come out nervous or, you know, soft. Now, there's always, and I haven't checked, and I don't know if you checked, there's always the weather factor in Chicago. But that would be the only thing that would worry me, is if it's that's like what we saw in Ann Arbor in the Ohio State Michigan game. Oh, and it's supposed to rain on Sunday. Oh, that's fun. But yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the only concern I would have, but I honestly don't think, I mean, they can run the football so well, and you get Kyler back, they'll be able to throw when they need to. I just think that they're going to come out and make a statement. I'm not really worried about this team and their overall psyche or anything like that.
And I think there's one thing that also helps them. If in fact Kyler Murray is coming back from injury, like we hope he is, he's going to come back laser focused because he does not like to miss games. If they get him back and DeAndre Hopkins back and Max Garcia and Justin Pugh, which are all possible, hopeful at this point, according to Cliff Kingsbury, then I don't think focus will be an issue. And something that I think is an added bonus is that this is the first time in 3 years where they have not come off the bye at home. And so they have to take a business trip to do that. And their focus on the road has been unquestioned. Their road play has been dynamic. They've been great on both sides of the ball. They start out and they start out hot and they don't let up and they basically just crush their opponents. I think that's the type of game they're going to have, but the only thing I worry about is not focus related, but rust related for Kyler. We know that they play much better when they're ahead, but if there's a little bit of rust in terms of running the offense, rhythm, that could cause some problems early on. But let's not forget, this is a Bears team that barely beat an atrocious Lions team. A scrappy but bad Lions team. So I'm not super worried about it. You don't appear to be worried about it as well. I think everything's lining up. You're going to get the quarterback back potentially. They're on the road. They have something to prove. They have something to play for. They're playing to stay on top of the division and in the NFL. And so that is fantastic stuff. Anything more to talk about on that topic?
No, I think the one thing that you said, the slight concern is always going to be rust coming out. And if you're playing in a cold and rainy environment, it may not be a pretty win. But, you know, as we know, a win is a win is a win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Stack those wins. Coming next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the way. Let's talk about winning the division because they are getting awful close. In fact, there is a way for them to wrap it up before Christmas. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Arizona Cardinals now have a full 2-game lead in the NFC West, 9-2, as the Rams have lost 3 games in a row, are sitting at 7-4. The Cardinals could, and based on what we've seen, it is very possible they could wrap up this division in 3 weeks. That basically hinges upon their beating the Rams on Monday Night Football. But it's a very plausible thing. If they win Monday Night Football against the Rams, and they beat a bad Bears team, and then beat a bad Lions team, that's it. That's 12 wins. They've wrapped up the division, because if they beat the Rams, that gives them a fifth loss. The Cardinals hold a two-game, hold the head-to-head tiebreaker. The best the Rams could do if they won out and then the Cardinals lost their final three games would be to both finish 12-5, in which case the Cardinals would hold the tiebreak because of the season sweep over the Rams. And so there, like, the Cardinals and Seth, you told me before the game, what happens this weekend if they win in terms of playoff race?
Yeah, they clinch a playoff berth. Like, they are guaranteed a spot in the playoffs.
That's fantastic. That's a hat and t-shirt game, guys. That's a hat and t-shirt game. No, not quite. That's a champagne game, but not a hat and t-shirt game yet. That's what right. used to call it.
And you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it's crazy to think that in week 12 the Cardinals can clinch a playoff berth. But that's, you know, it's a different season for the Cardinals, and they've been playing very well, and you know, we just have to be excited to enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. And the way the Rams are a very flawed team right now. It's very, because, you know, I'll say this. I overlooked a lot of things when they in the offseason. They did lose a lot of guys defensively. I felt that they should have been the favorites coming into this season, because I think it's hard for a team like Tampa Bay to win it with basically the same roster, to do the same thing twice in a row with the same players. That said, as good as the Rams looked early, they do not have the depth on the roster that the Cardinals have in it. That's been the problem. And now they've added a new player in Odell Beckham, who's getting acquainted with the offense and getting acclimated, all while losing. He might not be their best receiver, but he might be their most important offensive piece because of his versatility in Robert Woods. They are doing without Cam Akers, and so they're you know, the running game has been good, but hasn't been consistent. The defense has had lapses, and Matthew Stafford hasn't been as elite as he was at the beginning of the year. We're starting to see some of the old Matthew Stafford habits from Detroit creeping in. He's been turning the ball over. And so do you think that the Cardinals have a legitimate shot at wrapping this division up in the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, I do. And the reason why is because, as you said, first off, they get a Bears team that's, I was actually glad they beat the Lions. I was really, I would have been slightly more concerned about this game had the Lions got their first win. And so for that reason, you know, and it's not a guarantee. It's not that you're not concerned, but I do think it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, this team, as you said, has been extremely focused, especially on the road this year. And they've got a great chance to really make a statement, because, I mean, you wrote about it today on your site, and, you know, we record Tuesday night. So you wrote about the power rankings on Tuesdays, and there were a lot of sites that are putting the Green Bay Packers and Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the Cardinals now. And they're giving them that Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers boost, right? Like, these guys have done it before, late, you know, in November and, you know, obviously December.
And the Cardinals have not. And then, in fact, this is where they started declining.
And so you've got that, you know, like you said, you just nailed the entire thing about the Rams. So you don't have to, you know, there's not much more to add there outside of, I think the biggest surprise to me is how much they miss Brandon Staley, their defense coordinator, that's now the head coach for the Los Angeles Chargers. You know, and both Staley and the Rams may want to get back together sooner than later, the way that the Chargers have played the last couple weeks, right? But but from that perspective, you know, that's a big change up, and it's difficult, and you're seeing the results from that. You know, and then they get a chance to lock down the division and clinch a top four seed in the NFC. And by that point, you know, against a bad Lions team, and by that point, you could be talking about where they're far enough ahead where they could potentially be a win away at that point from clinching a top three seed, right? Where it's just down to the Packers, the Bucks, and the Cardinals for those top three spots in the NFC. And so those are important games, because as we've talked about before, there's no gimmies in the NFL. There's just none. However, there are games that you should win. And the Cardinals have two of those games in their next three. And when you talk about should win games, those are sometimes more important than the big games, because those are the games that get you to, you know, the one seed or the two seed in the playoffs, as opposed to the big games where, oh, you know, you lose them and now that's the one everybody remembers. But you and I have talked about it last season. It wasn't the loss to the 49ers or, you know, or things like that. It was that loss to was it the Lions last year? Or
yep, they had that stinking game to the Lions, and then the Patriots game. Both of those games were bad losses.
Yeah, where those are games you should win and you don't win, and those are the games that you look at and you go, man, how do you overcome that? And that's what it was last year, and you don't want it to be this year, because, you know, you're going to have games against the Rams, against the Cowboys, the Colts look good, right, recently. I mean, I know they lost to the Bucks, but they look like a good team. And you're going to have those games, and those are tough games. Those are coin flip games. And we know the Cardinals are good enough to win those games, but they are too good to lose games to the Bears and Lions. And I think that's the more important thing.
Absolutely. Let's move on from that. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move ahead and talk about their game this weekend. They face the Chicago Bears. Let's preview the game, make our predictions. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Chicago Bears will face the Cardinals this weekend. They are a team who is 4-7. They picked up a win that snapped their five-game losing streak, and not sure what it looks like. I haven't seen whether or not Justin Fields is in or out, but this is going to be rookie Justin Fields, who's not been great so far, and or Andy Dalton, whom the Cardinals completely dismantled last year when he was with the Cowboys. What do we need to know about this Bears team?
I think the first thing you look at is, you know, how bad they've been since week, I believe it was 5. Yeah. So you look at it, they lose to the Rams early in the season in game 1. I think everybody expected that. That was in Los Angeles to open up the season on Sunday Night Football. And that was, you know, the MVP Matthew Stafford game, right? And you kind of talked about that. Then in week 2, they came back, they bounced back, scored 20 points, held. They played that, you know, classic Bears defense and looked good, holding down the Cincinnati Bengals. Week 3, Andy Dalton's still the starter, and and they just completely lay an egg. Against the Browns, they get blown out 26-6, and they decide at that juncture. Oh no, I'm sorry. That was the first start for Justin Fields, and they get absolutely destroyed, 26-6. Their offense had a total of 47 yards in the game, and you're going, oh, did they make the right decision? Then they rattle off two wins in a row. Offense is okay. They beat the Detroit Lions 24-14. The impressive one was they beat the Las Vegas Raiders 20-9. And now you're saying, okay, maybe this team's got a little something. They're 3-2, heading home to take on their, you know, arch enemy Green Bay Packers, and the wheels come off. And not just the wheels, everything comes off. They lose to the Packers 24-14. They go to Tampa Bay next week and look completely out of sorts, lose 38-3, play San Francisco, look awful, lose 33-22, and then they lose to the Steelers. And that was really the one where you go, really? Like, I mean, this Steelers team does not look good. And so they go into their bye and they come back, and then they lose to the Lamar Jackson-less Baltimore Ravens with Tyler Huntley playing quarterback. And you're like, what is this team? Fields gets hurt. You know, Andy Dalton comes in, saves the day. And then they take on the Lions team. And like you said, squeak by 16-14. They played awful football. It was
an unwatchable Thanksgiving game that morning.
It really was. So a couple things. They're without their best defensive player, Khalil Mack, who's one of the probably 10 best defensive players in the NFL. He's done for the year, so he's not going to be back. Akeem Hicks has missed the last three games. He's questionable this week, I believe, still. He is a game wrecker in the middle of the defense. Getting Justin Pugh back and Max Garcia back would be paramount if Akeem Hicks is in. Outside of that, they're just not very talented defensively. Obviously it's hard to be a good defense when you're missing star players, but you look against, you know, offense.
And also it's really hard to be a good defense when you have an atrocious offense. And this is an offense that's averaging 16 points a game.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at it against the good offenses they've played, you know, Tampa Bay, 408 yards. The Green Bay Packers put up over 300 yards. You know, the Cleveland Browns put up over 400 yards. And then the 49ers, which is what got Jess and I concerned about the 49ers game. Remember this, they put up 467 yards of offense in that game. They looked unstoppable. And the only team that stopped them since has been the Cardinals in that one game. But you look at it, you know, their defense is not the normal Bears defense. They're not great against the run. They're not bad against the pass, but a lot of teams just don't throw the football on them. They have the third least attempts in passing attempts in the NFL faced. Like, teams just don't have to throw the ball on them because they can't stop the run. They don't force turnovers. You know, they allow, they're decent in yards. They're top 10 in yards allowed. But when you look at it from like yards per drive and a points per drive, they're really, really bad on both sides of the ball. They're 26th in defensive points per drive, and they're 29th in offensive points per drive, meaning they're the fourth worst team in scoring points every on offensive drives. Part of the reason they're so bad defensively, point scoring, was, as you alluded to, their offense sucks. So what ends up happening is teams get good field positioning. They're 27th in the NFL in opponent's starting field position. They're 30th for their own starting field position. So, like, they just, I mean, they don't do their defense any favors, and their defense, to your point, is it's one of those defenses that you're like, okay, this is a game. Like, it's, you know, 10-3 at half. Like, what, you know, they've got a real shot at winning this one. And then it comes back, and you look at it and you go, well, they lost 27-10. And it was like, yeah, because their offense sucks to the point where they couldn't do anything in the second half. And their defense just got so worn down that they couldn't stop anybody. And so that
very reminiscent of the back half of the 2014 season when they couldn't generate offense once Ryan Lindley started playing.
Took over. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting because this isn't that type of situation, to your point. Like, David Montgomery is a good running back. He could, you know, he and Khalil Herbert, a guy that I talked about quite a bit coming out of Virginia Tech, that I thought he was going to be a nice player in the NFL. They're a nice 1-2 punch. They've done a nice job this year when both are healthy. When Montgomery's healthy, he's a guy that can get you, you know, 110 yards on 25 carries. Like, that's the type of back he is. They have, you know, two really good weapons in Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney, who Mooney is a big play threat. Like, you need to watch out for him. He's a guy that can go up and make plays. He is fast. He is, he can score from anywhere on the field. I wrote about him in my betting preview for Thanksgiving Day games because he was, his over under was like 55 yards. And I said, don't just take the over. I personally bet that he would gain over 100 yards in the game at plus 550, meaning $100 wins you $550. And I bet that, and I hit in the third quarter. That, I mean, that's just how dynamic he is on a team that doesn't move the ball. Like he's that good on a bad team. So when you look at it from that perspective, they've got weapons. It's just the offense has just been so bad. Some of it's quarterback play. Like you said, Andy Dalton's not great. Justin Fields is a rookie, and they've really handcuffed him. So if they get Fields, I feel like that's a – I feel like getting Fields is a little bit more of an easier time for the Cardinals than getting a guy like Dalton who can have those random – hot streak games, you know, where they kind of catch fire and hit for 325 yards and three touchdowns. Fields isn't going to do that. Now, the reason why isn't because Fields can't do it, but instead because they just refuse to let him do it, which is why Matt Nagy is going to be fired in 6 weeks. So,
and again, the Bears, just to throw this out there, the Bears are actually a team to watch this offseason for potentially a couple of guys that are on the league's radar if they're changing both their GM and their head coach. Keep an eye on Adrian Wilson and Vance Joseph. They could be coaching against, they could be facing their future team in the future. That's just something to throw out there, just from what little whispers that some of us have heard. I don't think the Cardinals, I think the Cardinals will come out, especially if Kyler's back. They'll be dynamic. I think if Kyler's back, they'll be dynamic. And if it's Colt McCoy again, I think they will be steady. If we look at, you know, they should have had 30 points against the Seahawks. I don't think that.
Yeah, poor Matt Prater was so tired.
Well, and you know. They had the new snapper, long snapper, whatever. But I don't think that them scoring 30 points is out of the question, especially when you get Kyler back coming out of the bye. I'd like to say this is going to be, and I hate to just predict big blowouts on the road, but this is one of those games that they should. If it's Andy Dalton, you know what you're going to get. And I think they can defend that rather well. Justin Fields becomes a little bit more of a wild card, except there is film on him. This isn't like against Trey Lance when they just had to kind of guess. This is a game the Cardinals should dominate nearly from start to finish. If it's not from start to finish, then it's where they hiccup early, like with the Jacksonville or Houston, and then just dominate the rest of the way. I expect this to be, what, 31-16, 31-13 type thing, maybe 31-10.
Yeah, and I was going to say I've got this one 27-13. So
where they run out the clock, they just run it down with the and end up kneeling it down instead of scoring that last touchdown. Or maybe Prater misses a field goal again.
Right, exactly. And I do, the only reason I say that is because I actually just did look at the weather, and there's a 50% chance of rain, and it's only going to be 46 degrees. So you look at it and you go, if it's
James Conner season, baby.
Right. If it's rainy and cold, you're going to get a lot of James Conner and Eno Benjamin, because we don't know what's going to happen with Jonathan Ward. He just entered the COVID protocol. Chase Edmonds has one more week on IR because they don't do it by weeks, but by games, which is the dumbest thing ever. But
So with that, let's wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk of the web. This is episode 335. Of course, we will be back again next week to recap this game against the Bears and the look ahead to the big game they will have against the Los Angeles Rams. If all things go correctly, we'll have Kyler, we'll have DeAndre, and have a Cardinals win with a chance to almost basically lock up. If they beat the Rams after beating the Bears, they have almost, they won't have clinched it, but they will have locked up this division. And with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.